This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Dr. Tim Marke, welcome to Power 98.7. Sir, how are you?
I'm good and you, Denzel, and good evening to your listeners as well.
I know we were supposed to get you at 5:30, sir, but welcome to the conversation. we're running early, and I thought I'd get you to bed a little earlier, but maybe the conversation also is of such a nature that when I was, you know, looking at some of the aspects today, I absolutely found it fascinating. Some of these aspects, you know, and let me tell you, I never went through the report in its totality. It is something like a 50-page report, a 100-page report. So I never went through that. So I brushed through a lot of the other stuff. But what I did pick out talking about cities and their finances, and you're the expert here, is something I said just before I came to you, that policy and practice differentiate cities from other local government entities. I found that out. And, you know, sometimes you make the mistake by looking at a city, a metropolitan, because they all sometimes grouped together. But that's, of course, why we have a mayor of Johannesburg and a mayor of Tshwane. And then we have, of course, the metro, and we have the province, and we have national government. But they all play different roles. Now, I also said the cities themselves are very, very different, even when you do speak of them, even though they are, and we talk about cities, but they themselves are very, very different. Just location, for example, is a differentiating factor. So how do you begin to, when you talk about cities, is it important then to get to the detail, the nitty-gritty specifically? Because there are broad issues that we can deal with or that need to be dealt with and that fix these kind of things. But in essence, every single city different.
Look, thanks, Denzel. Mm. That's a very valid point that you've mentioned.
Mm.
The crux of the matter is that every city is different from the other. That is the reason why even their key economic activities are not the same.
Mm.
Now, the moment you treat them all the same, that's where you're going to make a mistake, because you're now invoking the one-size-fits-all.
Mm.
And the one-size-fits-all may not be able to work.
Mm.
What the city of Johannesburg is facing may not be the same as what the city of Etegwini might be facing.
Mm.
What the city of Cape Town is facing may not be the same as what Nelson Mandela Metro Bay is facing. So as a matter of fact, when you have to do a proper diagnosis of the performance of all these cities, there are varying factors that you always need to take into consideration.
Mm.
But be as it might be, we need to also acknowledge the fact that there are those factors that will remain common across all the cities. And that is the reason why when it comes to those that will become your common denominators, then you can be able to say, this was supposed to have been considered this way, considering this factor, because it's common across all the city. Like, for an example, we need to always keep up in our minds that South Africa will become part of the global community. Whether we like it or not, whatever happens globally, it has got either a negative or a positive effect on what we do in South Africa. So it's the same with the cities. Whatever happens at the national space has got a huge effect and a huge impact on the cities, in the sense that those policy imperatives have got either a negative or a positive a result on the city. So it becomes very important that when we regulate, we should be able to put in the back of our minds that those other factors that the cities may not have direct control over, they get prepared to be able to respond to those kind of situations. And currently, as matters stands, even if the cities could come up with other mechanisms to make sure that they grow the development in their areas. But that is also largely dependent on the economic growth in the country. So if the economy in the country is not growing, it also poses a threat on the financial viability and sustainability of the cities. And certainly there is a factor that is affecting all of them all at the same time. But you need to also bear in mind the fact that their economies will definitely differ from one city to the other. And those then becomes areas that the cities themselves need to make sure that they are quite wide awake on, so as to be able to make sure that their response mechanisms are able to speak to the relevant economies that are predominant in their area of jurisdiction.
You spoke about when you regulate, you've got to take all of these things into consideration. And some of those things, I think I mentioned earlier on, different geographics, history, strategic locations, and the ability that you've just mentioned also now, the ability to attract investment. So when you regulate, you need to take these things into consideration. Do you find, though, that policy and policy makers treat cities almost identical? When you begin to see policy, though, around these kind of things, you don't see the innovation that you've just been talking about right now.
Look, let's look at one of the critical things that I've always argued, that if you can't fund local government adequately, surely you must be prepared that there's going to be a collapse of basic services at some point, because if local government is going to suffocate at some point, surely services are going to suffer. Let's look for a point in case with the policy imperative on the allocation or the distribution of nationally raised revenue, such as your equitable shares. We all know for a fact that if you look at the city of Johannesburg, it is always flooded with all of us coming from the different provinces and even beyond the borders of the country. But what they get allocated to operate and maintain the systems within the city remains the same based on the formula that has been derived, which formula will take into cognizance the issues of the population of the area. But the influx of the urbanization that we're seeing happening all the time, it's something that is not always given the necessary attention it deserves. And that puts a huge strain on the cities to be able to make sure that they achieve their objective in terms of the requirements of the, you know, the integrated urban development framework. Now, for them to be able to succeed in those kind of things, that's where the policy imperatives must be able to support the cities in the quest to make sure that they are able to deliver on their mandate. And without doing that, for obvious reasons, then you're going to see a lot of spillage of sewers in the street and all of those things, because the systems and the infrastructure within those cities are not coping, and the city may not be able to raise extra revenue to be able to make sure that they fund those infrastructure. So it becomes very important. And I know for a fact that there are numerous conditional grants that have been made available for cities for them to be able to create new infrastructures and also but to take care of the existing infrastructures. But because of these policy imperatives that we're talking about, some of those conditional grants were either once off or they were withdrawn at some point. And that surely tells you that when we make policies, we tend to ignore the fact that at some point, certain things that are beyond the control of the cities are going to make life difficult for them to be able to provide the basic services that they are required to do.
So the report says that over the past decade, the 10 years, cities have functioned, it says, in a very, very difficult environment, and it names some of them. It says the emerging climate change impact. It says continuing energy crisis, and I really want to talk about the continuing energy crisis, rising political contestations as well. Coalitions, for example, would be playing an impact in that. Embedded corruption, and we're seeing a lot of that at local government, and we're seeing that at national as well. And all of that comes and ultimately leads to a decline in good local governance. But then also COVID would have played a role, the report says. And then, of course, also all of these pointers lead to a decline in city finances. Poor management then also would be, if I think about that, if I would just throw that into that as well. Do you want to just talk separately then to the kind of characteristics that impact one's or a city's ability to begin to raise and funds, and the kind of restraints that it has? Stagnant and declining economy is what we have basically in this country. And so, you know, when one thinks of what you've just said, one would then automatically begin to make the deduction that if it's not going well with the national economy, it's going to go worse with local government and with cities. Is that a fair deduction to make?
No, that's a real deduction, not necessarily only fair. It's a real deduction, because for as long as the economic growth is going at a rate that it is, for obvious reasons, the cities are going to be affected because they'll not be able to attract more investors in their areas. And as a result, it affects their tax base. It affects their ability to raise extra revenue for them to be able to continue to provide services. And for them to be able to do that, Denzel, they need to invest more into their infrastructure.
Yeah.
Now, with all these constraints, with all these economic challenges that we're facing, they may not be able to achieve that appropriate infrastructural investment, because part of it is that a portion of it must come from the revenue that they must raise. But who are they getting this revenue from? They are getting it from a Denzel who's suffocating, who is not able to afford certain goods and services. And as a result, the paying of the municipal rates and taxes.
The service charges and the property taxes.
Exactly, exactly. Now, when the economy is behaving in that way, it simply means that the cities will not be able to come to Denzel and say, Denzel, we want our money and we want it now. They need to be taking into consideration the effects, the negative effects that come as a result of an economy that is stagnant, which is not growing.
And that is
a reality.
That's not so much in their hands, though. It's not something they can control, right? I mean, they could control some of the elements of the impact, but they wouldn't really be able to control what's going on with the national economy. But they would be able to make an impact on the kind of scenarios then that flow from that.
That's true, because as I said, that as South Africa, we're part of a global community. Now, if the economy crumbles in your developed world, certainly we're going to suffer as developing, because those who are developed, if they cannot cope with the economic crisis, it simply tells you that as South Africa, we're becoming worse than those who can be able to do better. And as a result, your cities will feel the brunt, because development happens within a space, and that space, that's where you find the cities, that's where you find a municipality, that's where you find a community. Now, if there's not enough jobs that have been created by the economy, it simply means that the indigenous registers of the cities will increase. And when the indigenous registers increases, who is going to have the capacity to subsidize those who are not able to afford the services due to economic changes? And that's where your funding model for cities as well needs to be looked in such a way that we need to appreciate the fact that they've got a huge contribution to make in terms of the growth of the country.
Sure.
And as long as we don't treat them with that appreciation, certainly, I'm telling you, Denzel, we will continue to see the declining financial ability and capacity of the cities. Let's remember, Denzel, coming, this report looks at the period 2011. But if you were to go backwards, maybe from the period before, maybe 2000, when the developmental local government started, that's where you'll really realize that everything at that time was going well. But it came a point in time when things started to take a different approach. And even in the report, it does show that majority of the decline started to happen during the period 2008 coming this way. Now, that begins to tell you that there were a number of factors that were globally happening and other factors that were happening nationally, which we were not ready to deal with them. And as a result, we find ourselves in the situation that we are. So, yes, the state of the national economy has got a direct impact on the functionality of the cities.
Doctor, like a good student, I'm going to make deductions from what you say. So I'm going to say firstly that I'm understanding that also what you're saying is cities sometimes or not sometimes, but they are the core of South Africa's economy. That's where the economy is. I'm going to go back to something you talk about infrastructure, and you've raised it a few times now. And I'm going to make a further deduction and say investing in infrastructure would indirectly or is indirectly linked to investing in future growth, because that infrastructure is where your future growth lies. But also, then I'll go back to the report, onto what the report says, is that under investing in infrastructure has actually happened over the last 10 years. I'll put that there at the end of all of what I've said.
That's so true. Even the Auditor General did highlight in their recent audit report to say that how many municipalities were able to invest appropriately in the operation and maintenance of their current infrastructure. And that is telling in the way in which the collapse of basic services in some of the cities we have observed. So it is true. If you can't invest in your infrastructure, it means that you are not creating new assets. But at the same time, it means that you are not maintaining your own assets. And if you're not creating new assets, it simply means that you are not growing at the rate that you should be growing. And that is something that we need to pay much attention to when we talk about city and city development. So now, you spoke about the issues. Oh, yes.
No, carry on.
Now, I was saying that the second aspect that you spoke about is the pandemic.
COVID.
COVID. And one of the greatest things that COVID has done to most of the cities, even the report does acknowledge that, is that some of the cities were not able to spend on their budget on infrastructure. And we know it was not possible during the pandemic for normal operations to take place. So it then begins to tell you that we need to be able to develop measures and mechanisms that will enable us to be able to adapt to any unforeseen condition so as to be able to continue delivering on the programs that we want to deliver. But the issue of climate change, eThekwini is the point in case. Look at how the infrastructure has been destroyed.
The floods.
And there was nothing that the city could have done, primarily because of the fact that this is a national disaster. But that begins to say to us, we need to change our attitude on climate change. We need to begin to plan and put in place mitigations that will help us to make sure that we minimize the impact and the effect of climate change. And you would have seen eThekwini's infrastructure was destroyed within a very, small space of time. Their water infrastructure and all of that. So it's something that, unfortunately, the cities would have not had control of. But what it simply tells us is that we need to be able to appreciate the need to pay attention onto the whole notion of climate change.
What do you say to some of the arguments that are made? And Basil in Boksburg, I see you already coming in, and you do have a question. Doctor, what do you make of some of the statements that are made around infrastructure, eThekwini, and the floods, around some of the suggestions that the infrastructure was weak, the infrastructure was not of a standard that was capable to hold out, let alone be it all the floods, but even where, you know, there were minute elements of a disaster, some of that infrastructure should have held out. That's the argument that's being made. And yet, you know, seemingly every or all infrastructure was seemingly destroyed. Is there a differentiation that one can make between an argument that says it's because you didn't do the infrastructure, you know, to the standard that it should have been, to the level or expertise that it should have been, hence when, you know, the simplest of rains come, it also gets destroyed? I understand that this, of course, was a national disaster of some, but those rumblings do happen within that space as well. Is there a conversation that talks to the quality and to the extent of which infrastructure also needs to be of a certain standard?
You see, Denzel, if we want to deal with the conversation correctly, we need to start it from where we have to appreciate the need for us to manage the use of land properly. And then I think the spatial development framework is trying to guide municipalities, cities as well, in terms of how we...
Good point. I think that's a brilliant point.
Because, you see, if you are going to develop a settlement or a business in a flood line, Denzel, you are just calling for trouble even before it happens. Now, that tells you that no matter how the level of the infrastructure that you're going to put in there, the fact that you have decided to put a development in an area which is a high risk when it comes to natural disasters, surely you were planning to fail even before the failure can come. So that is one element that we need to look at. Yes, then there is the second element, which is the quality of the infrastructure, and that comes to the point, one of the points that the report also raised, the issue of corruption and the deteriorating local governance. Because if we are supposed to spend 20 rands to buy a bottle of water, but we go and spend 120 rands, that simply means that we may not be able to buy the required number of quantity of the bottled water that would have required. So it is the same. When you invest in infrastructure and there is elements of corruption, the quality of the service is going to decline. Because somebody is going to make sure that they cut corners in order for the project to be seen to be complete. And you'll only come to realize 12 months down the line that this infrastructure is even deteriorating even before its useful life can be reached. Now, that becomes a wasted financial resource as a result of the conduct of those that are responsible or assigned the responsibility. So that aspect of the quality of the infrastructure cannot be divorced from the reality of you having to continue to maintain your infrastructure. The car that you're driving, Denzel, for it to be able to take you from point A to point B, when it's time for it to be taken for service, what do you do? You do take it for service. If you're not going to take it for service, be ready that one of the good nights you're going to sleep in your car in the middle of the road where there is not even network for you to can communicate, asking for assistance. So it's the same with the infrastructure. The moment you maintain and operate it correctly, you are giving it a new lease of life. You're giving it an extended life so that it could last you longer while you're preparing to create a new infrastructure that will be able to take over from the old one as soon as you decide to discontinue it. So those are some of the issues that if we don't look at them, and I think when it comes to floods, one of the immediate things that we need to think of is our stormwater drainage. And then I think that's one ticking time bomb that is waiting to explode throughout the country in most municipalities. The stormwater drainage are no longer being properly maintained. And then you see the water running through the streets whenever there is a rain, whether it's a big or small rain. The immediate thing that you'll see is water running in your streets. And that becomes an indicator to you to say where and what has happened to my stormwater drainage.
Mm.
And that is the reason why, as long as they are not being maintained, when the rains comes, the water creates floods even when it was not supposed to be creating a flood. And that's another reality that as local government practitioners, as local government leaders, we need to begin to have those serious conversations to say some of the things that can help us to protect the infrastructure is just to maintain what we have so as to make sure that it is able to operate optimally and we will not have any losses of money through unnecessary maintenance that would happen from time to time. So that's a point that we need to take into cognizance when we talk about some of those disasters, particularly the floods that happened in KZN. And yes, there will be certain areas that there was no way they could have been avoided. But there are certain instances where we need to appreciate the fact that the failure to implement policy framework adequately has led to the kind of situations that we sometimes find ourselves in.
I'll make two deductions from, like a good student again, from what you've said, and you don't have to really, you can just say yay or nay. The one deduction that I would make around water is one whereby cities also need to diversify their sources of water, but also they need to plug those leaks, because you know when Johannesburg, Gauteng was going through this water crisis. Everybody said, actually, there is no shortage of water. The problem is between Rand Water and the municipality, and then the municipality to its stakeholders. And before it even gets there, 40% or 35% is already gone. And somewhere, someplace, the city has to recoup that particular money, because that's the kind of leadership they would have paid. So that's the one element. But on the other element of infrastructure, as you were talking, I'm also very aware of the fact that, you know, different things cost different, have different prices at different places. If I went to China Mall and I bought a particular, you know, electric cable and they said 20 Rand, and I went to a proper engineering, setup and they said 50 Rand, I would obviously assume that there is a difference in that particular cable. And my assumption from what you're saying also, my deduction would be that some of these things, when the tenderpreneurs are involved, go and buy the 20 Rand cable, which is, of course, going to give you a problem in 3 weeks' time, whereas you could have used the 50 Rand cable, but you've charged for the 50 Rand cable and given me the 20 Rand cable. Would I be correct?
You're quite right, Denzel, and I think those are some of those issues that we need to really take care of. And I think just going back to the one that you raised on the water, let's bring also a human element in it, because part of the things that also create this, we normally call them the water losses or the non-accounted water. Now, these water losses, some of them happen because you and I, we go and tamper with the municipal infrastructure and connect ourselves so that we are able to get water. That in itself, sooner or later, is going to create problems in the water network. Now, it calls on responsible citizenry for us to be able to work together with the city to make sure that the infrastructure is well taken care of. You would have seen on the news the other day, the city of Cape Town went on to remove illegal connections of electricity. Now that is it's a disaster in its own, just besides the fact that the city was losing money. But should any of those cables trigger any of the others, the kind of disaster that might occur there, we might not be able to stand for it, and the next moment we'll be calling for government to say you did not protect our people whereas the electrocution happens as a result of the illegal connection. So some of these things call for us as society to also be able to work together with our cities to make sure that we follow all the necessary bylaws and allow them the space to make sure that they provide services to all of us. Yes, we do understand that in certain instances, because of this migration, because of this urbanization, people are in a hurry to want to get services, and they end up creating their own ways and means to get those services. And those ways and means of getting the services affect the resources that the municipality or the cities will be using to make sure that every person in the city does get the kind of services that they deserve. So yes, your deduction is correct, Denzel.
Sure. Let me bring Basil into the conversation. Basil in Boksburg?
Hi, how are you?
Sure, Basil.
It's a very fascinating conversation, and your guest is very insightful, and thank you for that.
Sure.
So mine is this. What is the impact of the collapse of Eskom in terms of the cities getting the revenue that I get? Because my understanding is that they will be buying electricity in bulk and make some sort of a profit out of it. And secondly, the issue of the administrators, the quality of administrators, in the sense that they cannot be able to, for instance, he's talking about the storm drainage that is collapsing, or that has collapsed in most of these cities. And secondly, the corruption. What is the impact in terms of, because if you have administrators that cannot be able to analyze the situations on the ground, and secondly, you have tender premiers who are administrators, what is the impact in terms of the city's coffers in the long run, in the impact thereof?
Sure. Basil, thank you so much. Lennox, I see you, but Lennox, I'm going to deal with the question separately, Lennox, because I do want Dr. Tim Marker just to engage Basil's question, and then I want him also to engage your question in detail as well, Lennox. So hold on, Lennox. Dr. Tim Marker, I think what I also hear Basil saying there is the capacity, the loss of skills across all spheres of government, and the professionalism of local government sphere as well, key positions, and those needing to be appropriately qualified individuals as well. I think he's right at the end there. I think he's hinting to that aspect as well as part of his question.
Look, Denzel, let's say I would want to try and tally or tie the issue that he has raised with the corruption issues that we highlighted earlier on. Look, there are very competent employees within cities, but most of them become disgruntled just to see how we are not able to deal with the scourge of corruption. That demoralizes people, that demoralizes that professional person who want to do more for his or her own city. And as soon as we begin to be very serious in dealing with the elements of corrupt practices within our institutions, surely we're going to see a decline in the appetite, specifically from those people who are committed to want to do more, when they realize that a person who will stay at home for a period of a month without coming to work will still receive the same salary that this official has been coming to work on daily basis trying to do something to make sure that people get services. Now, if you can't deal with those simple things, Denzel, it affects the attitude, the morale of the staff. And by so doing, it places the institution at a risk where you have got the staff complement that does not commit to the work that they are supposed to do. Not to say that they don't want to do it, but there are those kind of factors that will create an environment that is more demoralizing. And I think it's one of those things that needs to be dealt with. The second part of what Basil is saying, Basil, it is true, we may need to relook at our recruitment and selection processes within these institutions, because a local government must be treated more as a trading entity. It's not just it shouldn't be taken as lightly as what we have observed or what we have seen of late, where even the recruitment and selection processes are downgraded to a point whereby they need to make sure that Denzel comes into the system. Whereas we need to make sure that we recruit the people with the appropriate skill, the people with the appropriate knowledge and the experiences. Yes, I do acknowledge that at times you need to make sure that you allow those who are new to come in, but they must find the people who will be able to impart the knowledge onto them. Now, if you're going to employ a person who's not going to take his work serious, you employ new people, then you have that skills gap in terms of you not being able to increase the capacity of the municipality to deliver. Remember, one of the reasons why there are these things called the IDPs is that you need to be able to say strategically, where do we want to go? And then from there, you answer the question, what resources would you need to get there? And then you'll be able to say, do we have those resources, yes or no, currently? If you don't have, then you must go get those resources. And amongst those resources, it's your human capital. Now, you identify where you want to go, how you want to go. But we always mess it up when it comes to getting to resource that dream that which we have. We just add the numbers, but we're not looking at the quality, and the quality in this case will be the skills. The issue of ESCOM, I think even the report has highlighted, the energy crisis is really hitting hard on the cities. And it is quite true what Basil was saying. The state of energy or the state of ESCOM has got a direct bearing or negative bearing on the ability of the cities to be able to assure their customers that they will be able to provide them with a sustainable energy.
And predictable energy. Sustainable and predictable,
Sustainable and predictable energy, because remember, for you running your own business, you depend on the energy to be able to have the necessary man hours to be able to produce your goods and services for you to be able to sell them. Now, if you're going to find that in between the production time, you get disrupted by the load shedding, maybe the city is not able to guarantee you that will give you electricity, that will chase investors away from the cities. And that's where they begin to say, we think Rwanda is doing good. Let's migrate our company to Rwanda. And what happens to us? Unemployment increases. What happens to the city? The indigenous register increases. So those are some of the factors that are really affecting the finances of the cities. By the way, the report says, if you look at the source of revenue for the cities, the main source of revenue for the cities, all of them, it has shown that they depend on electricity as the main source of revenue.
Yeah.
Now, if there is energy crisis, what do you think would happen to that main source of revenue?
Yes.
It's going to be affected. And once it's affected, the ability to be able to provide the service to its consumers, its customers, kicks in, and the maintenance of the infrastructure as well becomes a problem. So there's multiple challenges that arises out of one crisis that we're facing in the cities.
Let me bring Lennox into the conversation. Lennox, and that's why I really, really wanted that critical question to be dealt with like that. Now, Lennox, you've also got one in Sasselburg, and thanks for holding on, Lennox.
Oh, you're welcome, Denzel, and good evening to you and to your guest. Yeah, for as much as the discussion is concerned, you often find that beyond municipalities being unable to collect revenue, the problems that tends to hinder with the ability to expand infrastructure or develop new infrastructure would at times be due to the hindrance deliberately caused by officials, because municipalities are highly politicized environments where you find that the political element encroaching into management. And at the end of the day, you end up with non-expenditure of infrastructure grants. And the monies that are unspent in terms of in a form of infrastructure grants will be taken back by Treasury. But you often find that to be happening with the bulk of municipalities that are on Category B and C. But then I would like to know from your guest, in terms of the metros, how big of a problem is that, if in fact at all?
Sure.
Thank you, Denzel.
Thanks, Lennox. Dr. Tim Marke?
You see, the situation at the metros is a bit different from the situations with your Category B and C municipalities. I think with the metros, the capacity is there to be able to deliver on their mandate as administrators. But of late, the trend that we are beginning to see, which I think Lennox needs to take in place, and that is also highlighted in the report, you know, the issues of the rise of coalition government.
Mm.
It is going to affect the ability of the cities for spending their infrastructural grants.
Mm.
Because when you look at the report, you can see that over a 10-year period, the cities have been doing well in terms of spending their conditional grants, and that will include your infrastructural grants. It is only in the 2020 year where in all municipalities, most of the cities were not able to spend, except for a few who were able to spend their infrastructural grant. So at the city level, the challenges are not the same as what normally happens at a municipal level. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why it happens like that is that at the category B and C level, it starts with the recruitment of a qualified engineer.
Mm.
If you do not have a qualified engineer, who will be able to say to a politician, I hear you, but I want you to remind you that if I'm going to sign these designs that are wrong, it is my profession that is going to be placed at stake.
Mm.
If there's going to be loss of life because the quality of this project that we're going to put is not up to scratch, the person who will be held liable, it is going to be myself because you have appointed me as your qualified engineer.
Mm.
But as long as we do not have qualified engineers appointed at your category B and C, you will definitely have the situation wherein any person, whether politician or no politician, can go to a person and say that this is how I want you to go in terms of this infrastructure. And that is one of the things that will cause the delays in the spending of the infrastructure at that level. Remember, the designs and drawings that informs how you're going to spend on the infrastructure must be approved by qualified and registered people. Now, in most of the category B's and C municipalities, they are not able to attract highly qualified and experienced engineers. And they end up having what we normally call technicians. And it's just unfortunate that even at that understanding, a technician does not have the authority to approve a design of a qualified and registered engineer. But I can tell you those are some of the things that are happening. And we shouldn't be surprised when we realize that spending at B and C, when it comes to the MIG, it's at the lowest precisely because of a lot of those. Those are some of the factors.
Mm.
Hence, with the cities, they are able to attract the qualified engineers. They're able to retain the qualified engineers who will be able to say to the city manager, no, city manager, please advise the mayor that whatever they have in mind is not doable. And these are the technical reasons why it is not doable. And I think that is something that makes them to be a different. But with the coalition rising, Denzel, it is definitely going to affect the speed in which infrastructure is going to be spent. And one of the reasons why it is going to affect is because of the fact that if there is delays in the approval of budgets, if there are delays in the approval of plans, because you still want to try and remove this mayor and bring another new mayor.
Mm.
And it continues on a vicious cycle. In the next quarter, these ones want to find ways of how do we bring... So this whole thing of coalitions where you find that council is not able to function optimally at a city level, it's going to catch up with the cities when it comes to them being able to deliver on the mandates that they have.
Dr. Tim Marke, I said a fascinating conversation when I started looking at the conversation myself, preparing myself for the conversation anyway. And you know, I wanted to talk to you about the private sector innovation, new revenue streams, but we've got to the top of the hour. I have to say, sir, it's been absolutely a lesson for me as well. So thank you so much for joining me here on Power Perspective tonight on Power 98.7.
Thank you very much, Denzel, and thank you to your listeners as well.
Thank you. And that's, of course, Dr. Tim Marke, local government expert.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.